It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning gonna keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline, and it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzin takes the snap.
Pass intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now, here's your host, John Schmelk.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat. If you want to join in on the conversation there, good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday morning, a rainy one here in New York City as we are now under a month until the NFL draft kicks off, and we'll continue our prospect series. And today we are joined by Brendan Sinone. He covers Florida State Athletics for the Orlando Sentinel. Brendan, good morning. How's everything this morning down there in Florida?
Oh, pretty good, John. Rainy down here, too, but other than that, I can't complain.
Well, Florida State, boy, to say they're loaded up with guys that are going to get picked in this draft is an understatement. A ton of guys, so I guess let's take them in order in which they're likely to be picked. And I guess we'll start with the big guy first. That's Timmy Jernigan, 6'2", nearly 300 pounds. Do you still see him going somewhere in the middle of the first round?
Yeah, John, I think it's a safe bet to say he's probably someone that's going to go right in that middle range, maybe as early as where the Giants are, 12 to 18 range, somewhere around there. He's looked pretty good in the combine, in the pro day he's looked well, and obviously if you turn on the tape and you watch what he's done throughout the course of his career at Florida State, and especially this past season where he had 63 tackles, 4.5 sacks, I mean, he's just dominant statistics for a defensive tackle. I don't see a reason why he still wouldn't be projected as a mid-round pick first-round pick because he has all the physical tools and he's been productive. He has a chance to maybe be the best defensive tackle along with Aaron Donald in this draft class.
You know, I've seen a couple different people evaluate Timmy Jernigan a couple different ways. Some people envision him more as a guy that's going to be that space-eating run stopper in the middle of the line. And I've seen other people say that, look, we think he can play that three-technique pass rushing defensive tackle spot as well. What did he primarily play at Florida State, and do you think he's versatile enough to do both those things at the NFL level?
Well, first off, I do think he's versatile enough to do both because he is pretty athletic for a guy. Again, he's 6'2", 300. He's not this giant, 6'5", massive guy, but he plays with a low center of gravity. He moves quickly. He's really athletic, and when you see him make some plays where he can chase guys down, and again, you get surprised by how well he moves for someone his size. Now, at Florida State this past year, he was more of a nose tackle. They kind of ran like a 3-4, 4-3 hybrid type of scheme, and he was called upon to take on a lot of double teams. And the thing about Timmy Jernigan, though, is when he was double teamed, he was able to kind of hold up against the point of attack and made a relatively undersized defense pretty stout against the run. It was a top 20 unit against the run, even though they didn't have a whole lot of size in the first and second level. But when he wasn't double teamed, he was able to shed through and get back and get pressure. So he has the athleticism where he can be that three technique where he can kind of shoot through the line of scrimmage and be a guy who makes plays, or he can be a guy who can be asked to take on double teams. He can play both, and I think that's why you're seeing him kind of hang around that top 15 range in this year's draft, because he's able to do a little bit of everything.
Personality-wise, any red flags? I haven't really read anything about a problem with the work ethic. Anything dealing with him one-on-one in that locker room every day that you think might raise a red flag from people in the NFL, or is he generally a pretty good kid?
Pretty good guy. Again, we see him in only short intervals, so it's hard to tell sometimes. But, in everything you see, he's pretty humble, respectful. He looks at you in the eye when he talks and just kind of down-to-earth guy. He seems like he kind of knows what he's about and doesn't get too arrogant or anything like that. And I don't – nothing that I've seen in the past year covering him that would make me say there's a red flag there.
Watching him play, if there's one thing that you would peg as a weakness that he needs to work on, needs to get better at, what would it be?
He was criticized a little bit for endurance. In the national championship game, he had to sit out a series against Auburn. But I'm not sure, John, if that was fair or not, because, you know, he had to sit out a critical series, but he was a guy who didn't have to play four quarters every single game because Florida State was usually up by so much that he was able to sit for a good portion of the second half in games. So he is going to have to work on that a little bit, you know, a little bit of conditioning, because he's not going to have that luxury in the NFL where you can, you know, be a rotational guy or a guy who only plays, you know, half the snaps other guys are. It's going to have to change a little bit. But that was the only really big criticism up in this past year, because, again, he did everything so well, held up against the point of attack real well, can get into the backfield and make plays. I mean, does everything that you asked him to do. That was the only knock on him that I really heard throughout the whole season. And, again, I'm not sure if that was 100% fair, because he did play really well against Auburn, too, and kind of was the catalyst who helped keep them to 2 yards below their season average for 4.4 yards per carry. So that would be the only thing, though, is can he maintain that level of play, you know, for four quarters, and that's just, you know, it's not entirely fair again, because we haven't, he didn't get a chance to do that this past year.
We're joined by Brendan Sinone, covers Florida State for the Orlando Sentinel down there in Florida. Let's jump up to the second guy who might be a first-round pick. I know a lot of Giant fans are hoping he will drop to them with their pick in round number two, and that is Kelvin Benjamin. Obviously, all the numbers you would want out of a wide receiver, maybe a little bit heavier than most wide receivers at 6'5", 240. That's Kelvin Benjamin. Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen from Kelvin Benjamin, Brendan, please correct me if you have a different impression, still a pretty raw guy, but has all the physical tools, if he improves his craft a little bit, to be a top wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, you are 100% right with that. He's extremely raw. I mean, even up to this past year, people weren't really sure exactly what they were going to get out of Kelvin Benjamin. Like you said, all the physical tools are there. You know, he's about 6'5", 6'6", 230, 240 pounds, and moves really well for a guy of his size, pretty fluid. But he's extremely unpolished. He's only played football since, I think, his sophomore year in high school. He didn't play football growing up a lot, and he comes down from the Beltway area where they produced a lot of talented guys like Anquan Boldin, and there's a lot of NFL players, you know, St. Tony Holmes, wide receivers from that area. But, you know, Kelvin hadn't played a whole lot of football up until this point. And, you know, he was redshirted as a freshman at Florida State, as a redshirt freshman then. You know, he was really inconsistent, and kind of, you know, the fan base was often frustrated to see this guy who moved so well for someone that's so big, and then he just didn't always produce last year. Then this year he kind of had a revelation. He came in camp much better shape, just big, strong. It's funny when you see him, he's for someone who's 6'6", he's so big, and then, you know, he produced this year. He had 15 receiving touchdowns, 1,000 yards receiving, and you know, the thing about him, I think that probably will intrigue a lot of NFL teams, is how he got better as the season went on. In the final six games of the season, he scored a touchdown in every single game, 10 touchdowns in that six-game span. So, he's someone that has the ability to be dominant, and is, you know, obviously he was Jameis Winston's favorite target in the second part of the year, and just a guy who you can throw up the ball to and say, go get it. And then there's not, you know, you can't teach 6'6", 240 pounds. You just can't do that. And I think that's the intriguing thing a lot of NFL teams like about him. That's why he's right now considered a late first-round pick, even though he doesn't have a whole lot of experience, because he does have that potential and that ability that really, you know, you can't teach that.
Do you think he needs to shed a few pounds, or does he carry that 240 just fine on a 6'5 frame?
He carries it well on his frame. I mean, he can't put on a whole lot more than that, and I think there have been some concerns before of him being in shape or whatnot, but when he's at his best and he's at 640 and he's playing like how he did, you know, and down the stretch of the year, he's fine. He plays with it well, and you don't see anything. He doesn't look like he's slowed down. He's not sluggish. He's not gassed. He's a high-effort player when he's on the field. He gets down there and makes blocks, and will set up things for his teammates too. But you just have to monitor and make sure he doesn't put on any more, because I think that's probably where he maxed out at a little bit, and he can't get up to 250, obviously.
With Kelvin Benjamin, potentially a late first-round, early second-round pick, in that Florida State offense, how much of the NFL route tree did he have to run, or is that one of the big things he's going to have to adjust to in the NFL?
I mean, Jimbo Fisher's offense is very complex. It's known for being difficult and has a lot of those route trees and a lot of options kind of put into it, and they didn't really sugarcoat it for him. I mean, he had to learn it, and that was, you know, he was part of a wide receiver rotation that really only featured three guys, so he had to learn all of it. He wasn't just like a specialist or anything like that. I mean, he had to learn the offense, and if he wasn't, you know, they weren't comfortable with it, he wouldn't have played almost every single snap on offense. So he's a guy that will come in with a good grasp of how things work in the NFL. I mean, he will have that, you know, conceptually, he'll come in with a pretty good idea of that. I don't think that's an issue with him going forward.
You mentioned his ability to move despite his size. Is he able to get separation? I saw all the touchdowns in the end zone, uses his body, boxes out, uses those quote-unquote basketball skills to make plays with a guy on him. But does he have the speed to separate, get behind the defense, and get away from those corners using his speed and quickness?
Yeah, he does. I mean, it's not to the extent of what you would expect someone that's a little bit smaller or something like that. You know, he obviously, that's not a calling card. But he's not this. You know, sometimes when you see someone that size, they're kind of plodding, and you're not entirely sure if they can do a whole lot other than just be a big guy who beats up on smaller defensive backs. Kelvin Benjamin does have the quickness to where he can get by guys sometimes. And again, that's not going to be his thing. He's not going to be known as a burner. But he's more than just kind of a one-dimensional guy in that regard.
Final question on Kelvin Benjamin. You mentioned his light kind of went on this past season. He really improved. Is he generally considered a pretty hard worker and a pretty studious kid?
I think with Kelvin, that's something more that, you know, up until this year, there was kind of a question about him. So he has the big thing he has to tell, you know, show to NFL teams is that this wasn't a fluke. This wasn't just me getting ready. You know, the first year I'm draft eligible, I'm really ready to kind of put it all together. And he's talked about that before, how he's out of shape and how he didn't really, you know, how the kind of that light bulb clicked for him this year. He kind of realized this was his opportunity. He has to prove now that he is capable of doing that, you know, consistently throughout his career. So that is going to be something that he does have to prove to NFL scouts and general managers is that this wasn't just a money grab or anything like that. He has to kind of prove that he mature and going to be able to maintain that maturity. So I'm not sure where that goes going forward. He's a pretty good guy when you talk to him. But, you know, again, you know, the fact that there was only 1 year where the work ethic really shone through might be a little bit of a red flag going forward.
We're joined by Brendan Sinone of the Orlando Sentinel, covers the Florida State Seminoles. And the next guy I'm going to touch on, I'm going to jump back over to defense. You know, might have been your best defensive player, yet he's the third guy getting picked, and that's Telvin Smith. And it's odd for a team to having a wide receiver come out and to have him be 2 inches taller and 22 pounds heavier than the linebacker. And it seems to me, if an NFL team can figure out a way to use Telvin Smith based on his size, he's a hell of a football player.
Well, that's exactly it. How do you use Telvin Smith? And you know, first off, the positives with Telvin is he's extremely instinctual, a really smart guy. Good things happen when he's on the field. He had 3 interception returns for a touchdown this year, and he, you know, surpassed Derek Brooks' record at the school for that season. He was the unquestioned emotional leader of that defense. He was the guy who kind of got everyone fired up. And I'm going to tell you right now is that the Florida State's going to miss him a lot this season because, you know, it's hard to replace a guy like that that's just so vocal, so consistent. Is able to keep guys accountable. I mean, he's extremely athletic. He's a 4.4, you know, 40-yard dash guy. The issue with Telvin, like you said, is he's kind of his size is a bit of a concern. Where do you put him? Is he just an outside linebacker in a 4.3? Is he big enough to play inside in a 3.4 or something like that? I don't know exactly. I think he's limited in that regard, and he's aware of that and aware that people are talking about him in that regard. So he's trying to pick up his bench press a little bit and show NFL teams that, you know, he has the strength to take on blocks and be more than just a guy who kind of is allowed to roam free and make plays. But he's a guy who has a lot of potential, again, because of his range, because of his frame. You know, he has a long wingspan, and he has the ability to make plays, and I think that's when you get down to it, is do you want someone on your team that is consistently making plays? And that's what he did throughout his time at Florida State, especially the last 2 seasons.
Well, and worst comes to worst for Telvin Smith. You know, the NFL is a league now that's going to a lot of 3-4 wide receivers, a lot of double tight ends. You're going to need your linebackers to cover. And I got to imagine, at the very least, right away, Telvin Smith will be able to come to the NFL and be a pretty good third down linebacker that can cover some of these running backs out of the backfield and some of these tight ends, right?
That's exactly it, because a lot of teams kind of like those hybrid, you know, linebacker safety type of guys, and that's kind of where he falls into. He's not quite fast enough to be a safety, not quite big enough to be an every down linebacker at this point. But what he can do is he can cover. And like I said, he had 3 interceptions for touchdowns this past year, had a lot of pass breakups. Again, he's really instinctual and always finds himself kind of in the right area, especially in pass coverage. So with that in mind, yeah, as you know, college football is obviously spread out to a lot of 4 wide receiver sets, and the NFL has done the same thing. So there's a premium on that. And I think that's where Telvin Smith's value is. And that's probably, right now he's probably projected as a second or third round guy, depending on how if the team falls in love with him, he could go pretty high in the second round because of that, because teams see value in that. So I think that's probably what his calling is going to be at this point in the NFL, at least early on, like you said.
Your thoughts on LaMarcus Joyner, only 5'8", 184. I know a lot of people think he's going to be a safety, not a corner. What did you see from LaMarcus Joyner at Florida State, and where do you see his future lying at the NFL level?
Yeah, outside of Timmy Jernigan, I think LaMarcus Joyner is going to be the most difficult player to replace for Florida State on defense. He reminds me, think of Tyrann Mathieu. He's kind of that mold guy where he played a lot of nickelback this past year, but he's played outside on the corner. He's played safety throughout his career at Florida State, a three-year starter. Was really kind of a catalyst for Florida State in their reemergence as an elite program. He was one of the first big guys who committed to Jimbo Fisher back in high school and has been an impact player ever since he arrived on campus. Again, he's diminutive, 5'8", 5'9". There's nothing he can really do about that. But he does, it sounds cliche, but he plays a lot bigger than that. I mean, he's the guy who finds ways to make plays, and he's just super, super, super intellectual when he's on the field. He sees things extremely well. I mean, against Clemson, he almost single-handedly, knocked Clemson down and took the wind out of him, and that game is passed for Florida State, 151-14. He forced the fumble on the first play of the game. He had an interception later on in the game where there were only 10 players on the field, and he dropped back into coverage and covered space for two guys and somehow picked off Taj Boyd.
Wow.
He's just a guy who just makes plays, and he's someone that in the NFL you figure there's going to be a space for him. I'm not sure exactly what role it is. You keep him in that nickel spot, and, is he big enough to play safety? I don't know if he's quite fluid enough to be an outside cornerback. I think his strength is going to be as a nickelback, and that's why he stayed an extra year at Florida State, was so he could learn to play that position and the new scheme they were going with. And he thrived this past year. He's a guy that has a lot of potential to be someone who plays in the NFL for a long time because he does everything right. And he has a really good approach to the game. He's not going to get outworked by anyone in the weight room or anything like that. He's always going to be there and do the right things. I think he's a pretty high-quality guy in that regard, and he's going to make some NFL team happy because I think he's someone who's going to stick around for a long time, at the very least as a specialist defensive back and as a guy who's going to make plays on special teams.
We're joined by Brendan Sinone from the Orlando Sentinel, covers Florida State. Just want to touch on a couple of those mid-round guys real quick before we say goodbye, Brendan. Brian Stork, center, 6'4", 315, obviously has the size. How effective was he as a center at Florida State, and what did you see from him in his years there?
Yeah, he's a three-year starter and someone who can play all across the offensive line. He's got to learn a lot of positions, but he stuck at center and he played really well there. He's a guy who he's responsible for calling out all the checks in the run blocking scheme, and someone who Jameis Winston felt really comfortable with this past year and played a really big role and maybe an underrated role in kind of keeping the freshman quarterback calm and helping him out as he with the Heisman Trophy winner. Brian Stork's kind of a throwback type of guy. He has a giant beard and is kind of grizzly and abrupt with the media sometimes. But I think that's kind of his personality. He's got this, he's from Vero Beach, Florida, and kind of has this tough, old-school type of approach to him. He's not the strongest guy around. I think that might be an issue going forward. But his versatility, his size, he can play across the offensive line. He's smart to where he knows different positions. There's a lot of value there for him, and that's why he's probably – every year you see a center who maybe gets picked a little bit higher than you think, and maybe right now he's a fourth or fifth round pick, but who knows, maybe he gets picked a little bit higher if one team falls in love with him because, again, his versatility and his ability to do a bunch of different things across the offensive line.
What can you tell us about the two running backs coming out, Devontae Freeman and James Wilder?
Devontae Freeman, they both, those guys left after the junior years because I don't know how much more they had to prove, especially Devontae Freeman. He was the first Florida State back to rush for more than 1,000 yards since work done in, I want to say, 1996. It was the longest active streak in college football, which is
wow.
Funny when you think about some of the backs Florida State had produced. But he's super consistent. Devontae doesn't do anything exceptionally well, but he does everything very well. He does a good job watching his blocks, letting them set up. He's a quick cutter, physical. He's only about 5'9", but he's 200 pounds. Plays low center gravity, catches the ball out of the backfield well. Maybe like a poor man's Maurice Jones, Drew, what Maurice was in his prime, where he maybe not quite that physical, but something amongst those lines. And I think a lot of teams like Devontae because he's a willing blocker. I mean, he does everything really well, and because of that, I think right now he's looking like he could be a fourth-round pick, maybe a third-round pick. He does a lot of things really well. James Wilder Jr., on the other hand, has more potential because of what he is physically, but he's a guy throughout his career people have kind of said maybe he should be playing linebacker because he's about 6'3", 230 pounds,
yeah.
And he just looks like a linebacker. When he runs, he doesn't always run super fluidly. I mean, he's powerful. He'll pull people along with him, but but he likes to go for the kill shot as a running back. He likes to deliver big hits, which you kind of like to a certain extent, but not to the point to where you're leaving yourself vulnerable. I mean, he's had some injury problems during his time at Florida State, and he never really quite produced the way I think that Florida State fans here in Tallahassee were hoping he would when he came in as a big-time running back. He was a good change of pace guy, developed into a nice goal line back later on in his career. Certainly worth taking a shot on later in the draft because of his raw talent, but just someone that never really looked like a pure running back.
You know, no surprise, Florida State won all these games and won the national championship last year. Two other guys on defense coming out in this draft, Terrence Brooks, a safety, 5'11", 200 pounds, mm-hmm. and then you have Christian Jones, the inside linebacker, both projected to be middle to late round picks. What do those guys do for Florida State on defense, and what do they bring in the NFL level?
Yeah, Christian Jones is a guy whose stock has fallen a little bit. You know, he had a really good junior season. He was productive as a stand-up linebacker. This year, he didn't look really instinctual, looked a little stiff at times physically. Like he has all the skills you would want, and he looks the part. He's about 6'4", 230 pounds, and you say, wow, this guy's really just ready to go and NFL ready physically, but I don't know, instinctually he's had a hard time, and this year they moved him to like that 4-3, 3-4 hybrid, you know, rush end type of position, and he did a really nice job there. I mean, he didn't put up huge numbers, but he got consistent pressure, played within the scheme, and was a big factor for them for why their pass defense was so good, because he was able to get to the quarterback a lot, or at least force them to get off their point and make them uncomfortable. So he has versatility, you know, because he can play with his hand in the dirt, or he can stand up, and that's probably why he's about a 4th or 5th round pick. But he's just not a guy who's flashed enough consistency during his time at Florida State. Now, Terrence Brooks, on the other hand, I really like Terrence Brooks a lot. He's a guy that has performed well in the offseason here with all the combines. I think he has probably one of the better combines of defensive backs. And
yeah.
He had 4.4 40, 30-inch for 119-inch broad jump. He was amongst the top of all the defensive backs in some major categories. And, you know, the one knock on Terrence Brooks is that his numbers were not huge at Florida State, but you know, he kind of has to join the club there, because a lot of those guys can have huge numbers, because right now we've mentioned, 5 or 6 defensive players that could be drafted, so there's only so many tackles to go around. The thing about Terrence is he didn't get beat deep a lot. He was always in position, showed a lot of willingness to come up and make tackles and run support. Really smart, he's a very fluid athlete. He just does a lot of things well as a safety, and can play cornerback too. And he can play a few different positions in the secondary, and I think that helps him and helps his stock a little bit. And I know the Giants are pretty well off at safety right now, so I don't know if he's someone they'd be targeting, but he's a guy that right now, I mean, he entered the offseason as maybe like a 4th-round pick, and now there's some people that are looking at him as maybe as early as a 2nd-rounder because he's performed so well in the combine. And again, if you look at the game film, you look at him at how he plays in games, he's someone that I think NFL teams are going to be attracted to, because he plays with such consistency. And now that those you know, test numbers start matching up with what you see on film, he's someone that's probably helped himself out more than any other NFL or any other Florida State player in this offseason.
Brendan, I appreciate the time. Great information. Thanks a lot, and we'll catch up with you down the road, all right?
Sure. Thanks, Tom.
Hey, thanks, Brendan. That's Brendan Sinone, covers Florida State, does a great job for the Orlando Sentinel. Some good information there. Florida State was one of those teams I wanted to hit. Not sure the Giants will even pick any of those guys, but considering there's so many of them, odds are they might get one of them. I mean, there's no surprise and no, you know, shock that Florida State won the national title last year based on all the guys they have coming out in this draft, especially defensively. It's like half their defense. They have a couple of defensive tackles coming out, a corner, a safety, and 2 linebackers. That's 6 guys. And how about the fact that Bjorn Warner came out last year for them, the defensive end? So Florida State's just developing a lot of great defensive players. And you heard about Kelvin Benjamin, very raw. That's something I want Giant fans, I hope you listen to it nice and hard about Kelvin Benjamin. Very, very raw. All right? Just keep that in mind. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Now it's time to talk with you. And we'll start with Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, good morning.
Good morning there, John. Good show there. I'm calling up there because I missed the last few shows. I got it on tape there and everything, and I heard your picks last week and everything like that. And I was just wondering there if the Giants would be better. I hear people talking about this Lawan there, that if he could be that impact player we're looking for, and then we would be better to take him because I watched this NFL Network, and there was this general manager on it. His name's Charlie Casserly.
Former Texans general manager, right.
Right. And he might have been a scout and everything else. And his thing is he'd take Lawan over Matthews just like that. He said, this guy will move the people off the line of scrimmage. He's a mauler.
As a raw athlete, Lawan might be a better athlete than Jake Matthews. I'm not sure if he's a better football player, and Jake Matthews also doesn't have those off-the-field issues that Terrell Lawan has, who was just indicted in an assault charge. So I think that's what probably swings the scales to Matthews. I think Lawan might have a bigger upside, but I think Matthews is a far safer pick.
Well, I'm just looking like for someone to take the Giants, be an impact player that would be there. I don't know. Maybe you could get somebody like from Michigan or something to give us the scoop on this guy here, John. I don't know if you could or not.
No, I will. Michigan is on my list. I will get somebody on about Terrell Lawan sometime either late this week or early next week.
Yeah, because I think there's a good chance it could come down to him or Ebron.
I think you're right.
And I would think, and I'm trying to think here which way to go. I like Ebron too, but I'm looking for the Giants. Which way would they'd be better? You know what I mean? As a team, if we would get this Lawan on there, and he could start right off the bat, and then we'd get someone like Patino. He likes another tight end or something like that way. But I know he didn't like Lawan. He said he'd take Martin right away. Correct.
I wouldn't take – I know some people like Zach Martin, somebody used to work with over at FAN, excuse me. But some people like the Notre Dame offensive lineman better than the Michigan kid only because he's a safer pick. He can play multiple positions, and you don't know what red flags have been raised about Lawan's off-the-field stuff. So would it shock me if the Giants had Martin ranked above Taylor Lawan? No, it wouldn't shock me. But I do think Lawan physically and upside and pure raw physical talent is a better specimen and prospect than Martin out of Notre Dame.
All right. If we'd got past his whatever off-the-field incidents, would the Giants be better, you think, taking him and getting one of them Nichols as a tight end? You think that would be better if it would all work out than taking Ebron? See, we'd have a couple starters right off the bat. You're talking about impact players and
well,
starters.
Well, Joe, here's my problem. The Giants and me already have their two starting tackles this year. So if you draft that offensive tackle, you're moving Justin Pugh inside, and then the playmaker you're getting in round two isn't as good as the playmaker you would have gotten in round one. My preference is you take Ebron with that first pick because I believe he is head and shoulders above the other tight ends in this draft in terms of his upside as a receiver. And then in the second round, if you want, you could take the best center or guard on the board, whoever is a more talented player, and then you have a guy you can plug in day one as a starter inside. You leave Justin Pugh out at right tackle, and I think you're good to go. That way you get a starting offensive lineman, and you get a star-caliber tight end with that combination.
Well, I know your draft pick. I heard your pick. You were taking a Martin as a center in the third round. I like that too, John. But I just think that we'd be better the other way. If Lawan could come in there, I'm not worried about Beattie because even the guy yesterday from Big Blue, he said there's question marks on him.
Sure.
If he can make it, that's fine. I would love to see Lawan come in there if they talk like this because we may have the chance. He'd be an impact player. You could put him right in there. Then you could have who'd be next? Say Schwartz there at guard. Then maybe if you draft that Martin, you could put him at center. Eventually he'd be there. You would have that new blocking tight end, like say Nichols or so. And then we'd have Snead, somebody to have to replace him and keep Pugh at tackle. And you could have that for 7 or 10 years, John.
Joe, I think it's a good argument. It's not the way I would go, but I could see why you would want to go in that direction. And if that's a direction the Giants would want to go in, I wouldn't be upset about it. Again, if I was sitting there in that general manager seat, and everybody can thank God that I'm not the guy sitting in that general manager seat, that is not the direction I would go in. But I understand where you're coming from.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know what I mean, if the Giants would be stronger that way. Because when you get a tackle like this that can move people off the line of scrimmage, and then if you could get that center and a blocking tight end, because we have more chance of getting a a blocking tight end, an all-around tight end like a Bavaro in that second round, John.
No, Joe, I hear you, and I think that will give Eli Manning a lot of protection. I think it'll help the running game. It would get the Giants back to more of that, you know, run first, power running game, conservative offense. But I would be a little bit concerned about Eli's weapons outside in that situation.
I understand, but I think they're easier to come by, these receivers, than to pick them up. These tackles are tough, and once you have the line together, at least you have that. And you were talking about weapons the other day, and we're saying we only have Cruz. Well, I beg the difference. I think Rashad Jennings is going to be a weapon. That guy there, he, you know what I mean. And if Wilson comes back, he could be a weapon there too. But Jennings, I think, is definitely going to be a weapon there. So
thanks, Joe.
You know, what did I wanted to say here too? And I think a key to the draft there, if Texas or if they trade their pick, if they take a quarterback first, you know, the Giants are going to have a better shot at getting one of these players here that they want.
Hey, look, Joe, there are a couple teams you got to look at here in terms of the draft. You look at Houston, what are they going to do? Is Jacksonville going to take a quarterback? Is Cleveland going to take a quarterback? Is Oakland going to take a quarterback? Is Minnesota going to take a quarterback? And even Tennessee, is Tennessee at 11 going to take a quarterback, which I don't think is completely out of the question. So those are the six teams you got to look at before the Giants. The more of those teams that take quarterbacks, the better off the Giants are going to be.
Another thing, John, here, with the, I think we should have a rating. Like I said, some people want to take this Martin, right? But you know, the Giants might want a cornerback. I'm just saying, one in the cornerbacks definitely would have to be rated higher than Martin, no?
I mean, I think it depends what list you look at. I think I've seen a lot of lists where Justin Gilbert has been picked ahead and is ranked higher than Zach Martin. I have seen that.
Oh, right. And that other cornerback, they're ranked by the so-called experts. They're top 10 or so, where Martin, you know what I mean, is mostly later teens the earliest. And you know what I mean? That's what I'm getting at. The tackles, the defensive tackles, you know what I mean? A rating on them, who'd you take, even like over Donald or something like that? Would these cornerbacks, you know, they'd be rated up there with Donald on that.
No, I agree with that. I think that's fair, Joe, but I think the Giants have added a lot of good young players at corner, and that really is not a need.
I understand that, but I just wondered, would we be stronger because you're not just drafting for this year but for next year?
That's fair. Thank you, Joe.
The key guy would be Lawan. And one other thing I want to say.
Yeah, real quick, Joe.
If you want to get even with Lance, tell him he's going to be in your wedding party, but he has to walk with Ann.
Well, Lance, I already picked the wedding party. Lance is not in the wedding party, but he is certainly invited to the wedding, and the invitations will go out in a few days, by the way. Lance better get his ass out there. If Lance doesn't get his ass out to my wedding, I am going to be one angry host, and he is going to regret it.
All right. Well, maybe he could drive Ann to the wedding at least.
Thank you, Joe.
We'll see you.
Have
bye.
A good one. Ann in D.C. Oh, my goodness. Oh, man. I think they'd, you know. Someone with that much anger in the Midwest, that wouldn't go too well for them. You know, people in the Midwest are very nice. But when you start being, like, rude, they get that Midwest angry thing going. It's not good. You know, you get that farm strength going. It's a problem. 201-939-4513. Back to the phone. Let's go to Avery in New York, who's been waiting patiently. Avery, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Hi, John. How you doing?
Doing right.
Thank
you, Avery. What's up?
I'm a first-time caller, and I've been listening to your show for the past couple of weeks now, and it's great. I like listening to the calls. Everyone seems very insightful and knows really what they're talking about. It's funny. I'm born and raised in New York, family from the South, but I was a big started in the 80s as a big fan, as a regular fan. Then I turned to a big fan, then a huge fan. Then after last year, believe it or not, I turned into a humongous fan because I'm really interested in this draft. And I'm with you. I everything that you said that the Giants need, I agree with 1,000%. You need, you know, one day I watch all the games. I want to one day come in to a game late. You know, half hour late, and I have the DVR, and I walk in, and the Giants are up by 3 touchdowns. That would be great. Every game or every other. I won't even win every game. How about every other game they're up by 3 touchdowns? We need someone that is a big-time playmaker, and we need this Ebron kid. And I've been watching the films, and know he can't. They say he can't block that great, but he's a big guy. He can learn it. We really need that. And when I hear that people always defense, I understand that, and that's great. But why, I don't understand, after watching, I mean, my heart literally broke in 1,000 pieces watching last year those games. I mean, it's like, and the people that they beat, and I don't mean to be mean here, they were pretty much kind of scuzzy teams. They didn't really beat anybody all that great. And it's like, you know, I'm tired of seeing that. I wanted to walk in, and we're up in the first quarter. We're up by 3 touchdowns.
You know, Avery, the funny thing about it, too, even when the Giants were winning the Super Bowl back in 2011, that was a team that won a lot of comebacks. And the Giants have not done a good job of getting out to early leads in a lot of these games the last few years. Well, I 100% agree with you.
I want to walk in and have to well, how did they score those 3 touchdowns? And DVR my thing back to watch how they got them. I want to do that. And that's why we need hopefully the first 2 rounds we go with impact players that can score points. I don't understand what some of the callers they're thinking a little bit, but we need for this season some impact players, somebody that can really score points outside of Victor Cruz and maybe, and I'm like you, Jernigan, I like the guy, but 3 games, you have 3 years. Like you said, he came in the same year that Victor Cruz came in, and look what Victor's done. So I'm with you. I'm not going to keep it the time, but I think that's the biggest thing. I want impact players at least the first 2 rounds. After that, you want to go defense and look at other things? Fine. First 2 rounds, except if there's someone, if they're off the board, someone that's like an incredible player like that Arnold kid. I mean, they say Donald.
Yes.
He's an if he's there and the other two, Mike Evans is gone and the Ebron kid is gone, then you want to go with the Donald, hey, I'm for it. But outside of that, look big time in the second round because it really was painful last season as a humongous fan as opposed to a regular fan to see them. But that's all I have to say for this time. I'll call back again, but I really enjoy your show. Like the people there, and the caller is very insightful. I learn a lot more than what I knew before than listening to you guys. So thank you very much.
I appreciate it, Avery. Welcome to the show, man. Thanks for listening.
Okay.
Have a good one. There we go. New callers. We like that. And he's right. You guys do a great job. We have good conversation. You guys make me think, too, a lot, which is never a good thing. But you do. We have a good time. I want to get Lance in here at some point. We're going to co-host the show. I got to talk to him. We got to make that happen. I'm tired of this day-to-day thing. We got to pick a day, and Dan's going to be the co-host, too. We got to figure that out. 201-939-4513. Nugs is out in Minneapolis. What's going on, Nugs?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, Nugs. What's up with you? I haven't heard from you all week. What's going on?
Well, you know, you took a vacation, so I took a vacation.
That's cool.
I want to give kudos to that last caller first, whatever his name is.
Avery.
That's a diehard fan who jumps on board harder when the ship's going down.
That's a true fan right there, baby.
That's a real fan. He's gonna be a Giant fan for life. And he kind of stole my thunder, but I just wanted to kind of address the Giant Nation. Like, you guys are skits. Everybody started. Where did this whole defense? Let's go defense craze. Anywhere in the first 3 or 4 rounds, come from? Okay, if we pick the 2 playmakers, we got to get 2 playmakers in the first 2 rounds. Point blank, the 2 biggest playmakers we can get that's gonna put points on the board. That's who we have to go in the first 2 rounds. And then I think in the next 2 rounds, we need to tinker with the O-line some more to make sure that we have an upright quarterback, you know what I'm saying, that can operate our offense. Any Giants fans that are calling up thinking, oh, maybe we should take this D-tackle or that D-in in the first or the second round, I'm just saying I disagree.
Hey, look, Nugs, I hear you, but look, I'm not going to disagree with some of these fans that pass rush is still a necessity here. I do think the Giants need to improve their pass rush. I still don't think they have enough guys that can beat guys one-on-one and get to the quarterback at this point in time. Now, that being said, I do believe that bigger needs are weapons for Eli and protection for Eli. I think those are bigger needs than the pass rush. But I do think at some point in this draft, if you want to bring in a guy you think can help rush the passer, I'm all for that. But I think what you hope is that last year's third-round pick, DeMontre Moore, is the guy that steps up and gives you that pass rush this year.
Right, but just like the last, caller said, to piggyback on what he said, I want to come in, I want to look at my DVR, and I want to see us up by 21. Our pass rush is going to be much more effective when teams have to pass the ball. So we come out, we get up on them, 15, 17, 20, 28, we know you're not running the ball. I bet you our pass rush is much more effective then, and we can have mediocre pass rushers, but we know he's dropping back to pass. We know they're playing us left-handed. We know we don't have to deal with the run. Now our run defense is becoming one of the best run defenses in the league by proxy because nobody's running against us because you got to play comeback ball. Yeah, we were one of the best teams of all, in the NFL for a while at coming back, just like you said, but you can't go to lunch on that every day, but you can go to lunch up. How many times has Tom Coughlin given up a 14-point lead in his career?
He doesn't, not often.
Exactly. So if we got an offense that's going to come out, boom, before you even know it, we're up 10 on you. Because we're still the Giants, so it's not like we're going to go 100% in the red zone. But I guarantee you, if we go and we kick the field goal the first time, defense 3-and-out coming out, put a touchdown up with Ebron, we're up 10. Oh, watch that pass rush. You know what I'm saying?
That's a good point. If you have a lead, it's a lot easier to unleash your pass rushes and blitzes if you're up. That is, you know what, Nugs? That is an excellent, excellent point.
Yep. So I've been looking at our schedule for, all this talk about the draft is kind of like giving me motion sickness or whatever. I don't know, because there's so many possibilities. You know, I'm just waiting for that day. I'm going to throw a nice draft party and
nice.
Hopefully, you know, get on the radio if you guys are having a show during.
Oh
the
yeah, yeah, guys, don't worry about it. We're gonna have a show Thursday morning before day one. We'll have a show Friday morning before day two. We'll also do a live show during the draft on Friday night with me and Paul Dottino dissecting rounds 2 and 3, and then we're actually also going to have a show on Saturday morning, too, before the third day of the draft. So we're going to have a lot of opportunities for you guys to get your phone calls in and talk some NFL draft this year. Nugs, thanks for the call, man.
All right.
Appreciate it, dude. 201-939-4513. Well, plenty of time for you guys to get in and talk draft. Plenty of time. Plenty of time. The mobile app, by the way, I've been told is working again. Not by our tech guru, Nirei Shah, but the people on Twitter. It was on the Fritz, but it's good to... It's good to have that back. Let's see. There was one tweet I wanted to get to here. Where is it? I don't see it. I thought it was interesting, and now I can't find it. Oh, well. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones. Now, Derek actually launched a huge Jarrell Jernigan debate within the Giants media family yesterday after his phone call to close out yesterday's show. But I believe you wanted to switch gears to defense today. Derek, what's going on?
I didn't want to switch to defense, but actually I saw draft day, and now I want to talk about the draft. Draft myths. So,
by the way, I have not seen draft day yet. They had a screening here, but I didn't have a chance to go and check it out. I was busy doing something else. How was draft day? Was it good?
Yeah, it was good. I thought it was a good plot, and,
Funny, very, very funny draft day, 2 degrees of separation that I have. A buddy of mine I went to college with, he's also very good friends with Lance, Aaron Goldhammer, hosts a morning talk show out in Cleveland. And when, I'm not sure if this got cut out of the movie or not, but early in the movie, Kevin Costner is, I believe, driving around and he's listening to the radio. And he got two guys on the radio killing him, calling him an idiot, doesn't know what he's doing, he's a bad general manager. That is one of my friends that I went to college with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's in the movie.
Oh, it's nice. Movie. It didn't get cut out. I love it. Beautiful.
Yeah. And, it kind of reminded me of, what's Dallas owner's name?
Jerry Jones.
Jerry Jones, how they put pressure to pick on the GMs, and well, he's his own GM basically, but
yeah,
how GMs will put pressure on your, how owners will put pressure on your GMs to pick players.
Hey, and I think that's the beauty of how John Mara operates, though. He hires guys and delegates responsibility. So he's sitting there in the draft room, but he's not going to be all over this guy to do stuff. He's going to let Jerry Reese do his job and not interfere with it.
And that's what I want to talk about, got me to draft miss. And one was, picking the best player. It seems like to me that always the best player seems to right align with the person that you need. And, you get on TV with the GMs after the draft, and they're the best player. We pick the best player. And just so happens that those best players just so happen to be the players that you needed in those positions. So that's one of the drafts, man. And looking at the movie, those coaches and like Coughlin and his position coaches are in that room pulling for their guy and making a case for their guy. They already know who they want before the draft starts. And, unless somebody out of the blue that's really a blue-chip player just falls, they're taking a guy that they have already discussed. And they may have one or two guys that they're going to pick between, but pretty much this is limited down to those two players. So, at that position, they already kind of know where what they're going to pick. Another myth is trading up is bad. I think, if you look at it, John, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Would you have done an Eli Manning trade?
Well, yeah, but in that situation, you're targeting a franchise quarterback. I think to get a franchise quarterback, I understand the concept of trading up. I think it makes sense. I think it's a case-by-case basis. I mean, I think targeting a guy Clowney is probably something similar. The way the Falcons, for example, traded up to get Julio Jones a few years ago, they kind of felt they were one player away, and you make a deal like that, I'm okay with that. I think the issue why I don't think it's a good idea for the Giants this year, Derek, is because they're more than one player away. They're more than just one guy from being over the top.
Well, that's kind of like another mixed message, too, because, you hear everybody like, if you don't get this player at position 12, it's a disaster. If it's so deep of a draft, then if you don't get a player that you want in the first round, then get him in the second, get him in the third. But, that's a myth that I think, is kind of like, I think to me, if you can move up and a player can help you win your division, and who knows, you can make a run once you get in. But you got to get in first, before you talk about which one player is going to win the Super Bowl for me. Pick a player that you think that can help you win a division, Like, if you got a player that you think, hey, we get this player, I think we're gonna be right up there with the Eagles or Redskins, then, hey, pick that player.
No, I hear you, but I think who the Giants can get at 12 can have just as big of an impact as someone they would have to trade up to 3 or 4 to get. You know what I mean? I think there'll be enough talent left on the board at 12 that they'll get somebody that can help them there.
So, like, if a Greg Robertson is available at 5, it's not worth going up to get a player like that because you can get Taylor Lewan or Zach Martin later?
Right, yeah. I mean, do you really want to trade up to get Jake Matthews or Greg Robinson if you can get, Zach Martin or Taylor Lewan at 12? I just don't think it's that much of an upgrade. You know what I mean?
Well, I think, like, a Greg Robertson could be almost like a franchise tackle, rather than a good tackle. So, it's a way of thinking,
All right, appreciate the call, Derek.
Yeah, we'll go one more thing.
Yeah, real quick.
I know you don't like to do scenarios, but say third round, you get a phone call, and it's the 49ers, and they say, we'd like the third round pick for Alden Smith.
I don't think the Giants are going to touch Alden Smith with a 10-foot pole, and the issue with that is that, they just gave Alden Smith that big contract extension, and when you trade a guy that
He don't have it yet, do he? Isn't he coming, like, they got an option they got to pick up?
I thought the 49ers extended Alden Smith last year. Am I wrong about that?
I think he has a option they can pick up in May.
Let me see. Hold on. Alden Smith contract extension. Let me do a little good old Google search here, see if I'm right or I'm wrong. Let's see here. San Francisco 49ers. team contracts. I'll tell you exactly what Aldon Smith's contract is. No, you're right. I don't believe he has signed the contract extension yet. I believe you're correct, actually. So I'm wrong about that. Yeah, it looks like they have some type of option coming up this year, and they'll have to make a decision on him. Good call. I was incorrect.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious. If they got that call, you know, would they even consider it, you know?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I understand he's a pass rusher that you want, but he's such a wild card. And yeah, they have a 2015 club option on Aldon Smith that they would have to activate at some point this spring.
Yeah.
Thanks, Derek.
It's good thinking about it. I'll talk to you later.
I hear you. Thanks, man. 201-939-4513. And that was the tweet that somebody sent to me before. They said, you know, wouldn't the Giants activate their option on Prince? But in you're thinking of the old collective bargaining agreement. You know, JPP had a five-year deal. He's a first-round pick. Prince was the first rookie class after the new CBA, so he only has a four-year deal, just like all players going forward drafted in the first round. That was one of the few concessions the players got out of the owners in that situation. They get that shortened rookie contract so guys can cash in sooner. So he is a free agent next year, Prince Mukamara. 201-939-4513. Ivan's in Staten Island. Is it Ivan or Ivan?
Yeah, it's Ivan. You always say that.
What's
you
up, know, Ivan?
John, it's Ivan. How are you, buddy?
Doing well.
One point I want to make, and then a question for you. Freeman and Flynn are supposed to be coming in to talk to the office today. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Say that again.
Freeman and Flynn are supposed to be reporting to speak to the Giants today?
The Giants do not release who they come and have visits with as free agents, so as a team employee, I cannot report on that either. So all I can say is that reports are saying that they're going to be here, and I have no comment on that.
Okay. My question was, as far as David Carr goes, as far as them releasing him, somebody who knew the system, knew it well, knew our receivers, has been with the team a long time. If, I know you can't comment directly on it, but if in fact we are talking to other quarterbacks, do you think it was a wise decision to let David go?
I think the Giants decided that Curtis Painter, for whatever reason, was a better backup than David Carr. And I think that was the decision that the Giants made. I don't think, you know, bringing in, if they do in fact bring in these two guys or sign one of them, I think the only reason they're doing that is because Eli Manning's hurt. And if Eli Manning wasn't hurt, I don't think they'd be even going down this road, to be quite honest with you. So I think the only reason they're doing this because of the injuries, I don't think it means that releasing David Carr was a mistake, because I still don't believe that either one of those guys will probably be on the team when all is said and done. I still think if the Giants had their druthers, Ryan Nassib would win the backup quarterback job, and he would be the number two, and they wouldn't even carry a third quarterback. So I just think this is a numbers game with Eli Manning trying to get back from that ankle surgery.
Gotcha. And the only other statement I wanted to make was kind of what the other caller was saying before about us looking for a big pass rush. I don't think we need it. I agree with you completely. Our secondary is so solidified now, and I think it's going to be dynamic and exciting, that if we just have a decent pass rush, those receivers in that backfield are going to be covered very well. These other quarterbacks are in trouble, and it's going to be exciting to see how the season plays out.
It'll be very interesting indeed. I appreciate the call, my man.
Sure. Hey, good luck on the upcoming nuptials.
I appreciate it, Ivan. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks,
all right, John,
appreciate it. Things are moving along. We did our Katie enjoyed writing out all those wedding shower thank you notes last night. That was fun. It's only the beginning. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Mike down in Virginia. Mike, what's going on?
Hey, man. I just saw a article about Kevin Williams coming in. I know you said you can't comment on the free agents. That stuff that hasn't been officially done yet.
Well, honestly, I could talk about Kevin Williams, and I think if they bring in a guy like Kevin Williams, he's a replacement for Sean Rogers. And Sean Rogers is the guy last year that played, you know, 15, 20 snaps a game. He was their run stopper. He played on first and second down. And a guy like Kevin Williams would fill a very similar role. So I think it makes a certain amount of sense, especially considering you lost Linval Joseph in the offseason.
What do you think about Sidney Rice? I know that he has an injury problem, but I know that they do a lot of incentive-laden deals where they have to perform in X amount of games to get a certain amount of money.
If you want to take a flyer on Sidney Rice and have him compete for, like, the last wide receiver spot, I guess I'd be okay with that. It's been so long since Sidney Rice really did anything in this league, and I realize he hasn't been exactly with the best quarterbacks in the world. I understand that. But that being said, I mean, Sidney Rice doesn't really move the ticker for me, to be honest with you. I mean, he's fine. He's good. You know, he had some moments. He's still got some straightaway speed. But now coming off a knee injury, how much does he have left? I don't know. If you want to take a flyer, have him compete, whatever, I just wouldn't get too excited about it.
All right. Last question. Every year we go, everyone tries to guess the Giants pick, but like, I don't remember the last time that everyone actually guessed the Giants pick. Nobody knew Justin Pugh was going to get drafted by us last year. Who do you think is that Giants kind of player that you can see the Giants going after with that 12th pick? You know, instead of the exciting pick, it's usually something that we're all just kind of like, eh. But, you know,
he
usually pays off, man.
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. You know, I don't think the Giants even know who that guy is yet, because like I've been saying for a couple weeks, and it's got to happen soon. The scouts still aren't back yet to put that draft board together. I've seen a couple of them in the building. I think they're slowly coming in, and they probably should get that draft board working by the end of the week. So as that happens, they'll get a better idea of who that mystery guy could be. But, you know, many times before, I don't think anybody expected the Giants to draft, you know, Hankins last year. I think that was a surprise. Jason Pierre-Paul certainly was a bit of a surprise when they drafted him. Prince was the guy that really fell in their lap. They weren't even, you know, thinking he was going to be on the board when they picked it. I think it was 19 that year, and they got Prince. So, you know, you just don't know who they're going to pick because you don't know who's going to be on the board. That's why all this prognosticating sometimes can, you know, kind of be futile and be a little silly. You just don't know who's going to be there. But at 12, I think it's a little easier at 12 to figure out who the Giants are going to pick as opposed to picking in the late 20s because, again, you just don't know how the first half of the draft is going to go.
Right. I would make one point about the defensive line.
Sure.
Everyone keeps talking about the secondary. Our defensive line at a bare minimum is going to be very solid, but as far as upside goes, you still have the monster, you know, and you still have JPP. If either one of those guys comes on and really brings it this year, it's a completely different defensive line.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think you hit it. Those are the two guys that are going to be key. Can JPP regain his old form? Can DeMontre Moore live up to some of his talent? And if one of those two things happen, I think the defensive line, even as a pass rushing unit, will be okay.
I agree. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Mike, thanks for calling in, man. I appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Roy's down in South Carolina. Roy, what's going on? Roy. Oh, we lost Roy last week, too. Put Roy back on hold. Don't drop him. I want to try to go back to Roy. Maybe he'll pick back the phone. 201-939-4513. Len's in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's going on?
Hey, John. Good morning.
What's
How
up,
are
Roy?
You?
How are you? What's up, Len?
Good. Listen, did your trip to Iowa coincide with the Great Drake Relays track meet?
No, they did not, actually, but that is a very big event out there. The Drake Relays very, very popular. Wrestling also big out there. A lot of people go to Des Moines for the big college wrestling championships. Iowa is obviously a huge wrestling
always
school.
A power.
Exactly.
Yeah, always
and
a power.
I think my funniest moment in Des Moines, they have a very nice arena there, the Wells Fargo Center. And the NBA D League affiliate, the Iowa Energy, play there. I did not go to a game, but they have a huge banner on the side of the building, and like the team slogan for the year to try to get you to buy tickets. Get this, tall guys, good times.
That's good.
It was very funny.
That's good. I tell you, nothing like a good marketing campaign.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm not sure if that's good, but it's something.
Listen, you're in the building, and so I'm 200 miles away. But you know, I would really be surprised. I've heard you say before that the Giants are putting together their draft board. You know, I would really be surprised if the Giants don't have the first 50 players tiered, John. I think right now that
I could tell you honestly. If I walked into that draft room last week, I think the board's blank. I don't think they've built it yet. I think, you know, somewhere on a sheet of paper or a computer file, Jerry Reese has it in his head. But I don't.
Yeah.
As far as I understand, that white magnetic board where they put all the picks up in order, I don't think that's even built yet.
Okay. All right. I just it's hard for me to imagine that you know I would think at this point they're looking at. You know, draftable versus undrafted free agents, and we're talking, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh round and undrafted free agents. But again, hey, you know, I'll take your word for it. Monday, I guess, officially starts off-season activities with strength and conditioning time at the Quest Center.
Starts Monday.
They report.
Starts Monday.
Giants
you got
report.
It.
All right, great day on the calendar. We have to be real careful, John, not to panic when we see the pictures on Tuesday morning or hear the stories or read the tweets on Monday afternoon about Eli either with crutches or in a walking cast. And Will Beatty coming in crutches or Walton.
Well, I can tell you, Len, I have seen Will Beatty. I've seen him walking around. There are no crutches. So he is walking under his own power, if that makes you feel any better.
That does. And but still doesn't deter me from, saying once again that it's just going to be hard to avoid the offensive line, John. I mean, early and often, maybe first and third, either Martin or Lawan, I would be happy with either one. I'd prefer Martin also, by the way, because of the versatility idea. And because we can keep Pugh at right tackle. And a center in the third, maybe the guy from Arkansas, or even in the fourth. We talked about, Stork from Florida State.
Well, yeah, and Len, I'm not sure if you're listening to that. I thought that the one interesting thing about Stork, which I wasn't aware of, I thought he was primarily a center. I didn't realize he could move to different spots on the line.
Well, that's interesting because the guy from Arkansas, the reputation with the guy from Arkansas is that he's strictly a center. You can't really try to move him.
Right.
But Stork would be an interesting one in the third or fourth round. But I think early on, particularly in the first round with that 12th pick, it just gets more obvious all the time. We got to protect Eli. And give him the time to throw the ball, open some holes for Jennings. I think the one thing that the new offensive coordinator is going to bring, I mentioned this once before, but I think it's important to repeat, I think the one difference in the Giants this coming season, John, is going to be we're going to throw to the running backs more. I knew I threw a number out that got a chuckle from you earlier on when I said I'd like to see the running backs on the Giants catch somewhere between 90 and 100 balls.
I think that's a little high. I think you're looking for more between 70 and 80, and I think that'd be a good number.
Well, then you would agree that maybe that's something we will see. I know we're just guessing at this point. We don't know, but I think that's going to be the big difference.
Put it this way. I think on his own, Rashad Jennings will have between 50 and 60 catches.
Oh, well, then we may get closer to 90, John, if that's the case. Because I think the other guys, when they're in the game, and even with the fullbacks, I think we're going to see balls thrown to the fullbacks, and if David Wilson comes back, I think 90 to 100 will be a reality. I think that's going to be an important part of our game. At least I hope so. Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Great show as usual.
Thanks, Len. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
201-939-4513. Let's stick to the phones and say what's up to Frank in Tampa Bay. Frank, what's going on?
Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
Good, thanks. I know yesterday you said that you were going to maybe go back and listen to Friday's show. Did you get a chance to do
that? I did not. That is on my list for today. Yesterday I had a mess. When I flew back, I had to fly to LaGuardia instead of Newark, so I had to have somebody drive me to Newark Airport to pick up my car. It screwed up my whole day. So at some point today, I will listen to the last 10-15 minutes of the show from last week. Oh, Dave from Rochester's on the line. I'm sure he's going to give me an update, too. I heard Lance was pretty rough, so I'm going to have to take it to him a little bit.
Tough planning a long distance wedding. Huh?
Yeah, it's interesting, and there are a lot of challenges that I personally wasn't prepared for. But we're fighting through. We're doing okay.
When is it?
June 28th.
Oh well, that's good. That's
yeah. So
good.
Everyone should, by the way, put on the calendars, folks. From about June 25th to July 14th, I will not be here. So you will get your full fill of Lance Meadow and Paul Dottino at the end of June and start of July. So just be warned.
Well, that's great that it's in June because hopefully Paulie Dottino knows you can't wear white drawers before Labor Day.
Well,
Memorial Day. So.
That is true, and it's funny, the thing about it, and you know, Katie always jokes about this, that we had to actually schedule the wedding at the end of June because of the Giants' schedule. That's after the Giant players are gone doing their workouts. It's before training camp starts. It's literally the one window that I have in my life where I can take 2 weeks off. So the Giants run everything would be the theme.
Good. Well, good luck with everything.
I appreciate
it. Maybe we'll wait then if you could go back and look, because we discussed Jernigan at length, and it kind of like your like your take on that. So maybe we'll wait until after you've had a chance to do that. Had a one or two quick questions, and was wondering what would it take to move up to like the 4 or 5 spot?
To move up to 4 or 5, I think you're I think you're looking at maybe you're 1 from next year, and then a 2 and 3 from this year. Maybe you can get away with the 2 next season and you're 2 and 3 this year, something like that. I'll bring up the point table here, and I'll take a closer look.
Could you save your 2 this year?
I think it'd be very difficult to save your second-round pick this year. But I'm going to bring up the chart here. Let me see. NFL draft trade charts. And, again, all, you know, different teams have different charts, obviously. This is just one of them.
Mm-hmm.
If the Giants wanted to trade, what do you think? Trade with the Browns or the Raiders at 4 or 5, I guess is what you're thinking. The fourth pick is worth 1,800 points. The fifth pick is worth 1,700 points. The 12th pick is worth 1,200 points. So you basically got to find 600 points somewhere. It'll be very difficult. If you're not trading your 2 this year, you're looking at your 1 next year and your 3 this season.
Okay. Reason I ask, I never really get into this stuff because it's too complicated for me, and
right.
I really have the time. But you know, I just keep thinking that, you know, possibly we've got the offensive line in a decent enough position, and you know, earlier when you guys were talking about it, and I really would love to see us at one point, you know, up 21 points in a game as well. We've talked about, you know, Ebron, he may or may not be there, but what would you think of the possibility of trying to move up to whatever slot would be necessary to get Watkins and then get your tight end and, you know, a substantial solid guy in the second round?
Well, here's the thing. Sammy Watkins, if the Rams can't trade out of that number 2 spot, it would not shock me if they took Sammy Watkins at 2.
Right, and I agree. I mean, I don't think – I'm for sure he'd be there, but if he were, what would you think about that? And then getting a solid tight end at 2. I'm just trying to imagine Cruz, him, and Randall – with, you know, Jernigan, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
Look, if you could add Sammy Watkins to this wide receiving core, I think people would be very excited. I think that's why people wanted, or at least were hoping, that Mike Evans was there at 12, so you can add that big receiver across with Victor Cruz. I think it's along the same line of thought. And, yeah, I think if you add a big-time wide receiver to this mix, I think it helps your quarterback an awful lot.
The reason I'm saying it is because you were saying before about, you know, if a team were one player away, and, you know, I think of him, and I think maybe we are. The offensive line is good enough. We got a running back. If we could get, you know, we could get a solid, you know, need him to do type of tight end in the second round if we could save it. That just seems like the one move that might, you know, might do it for us. And again, not needing the pass rush as much as you guys talked about, if we can get ahead of some of these teams, you know. It's just a thought, but he seemed like the one player in the draft that potentially could solve a lot of our problems and make us a contender against those East teams, you know, right off the bat. Just a thought. I was wondering if you thought they might be thinking in those terms.
Now, you know, Frank, but I think the reasoning you're giving is the exact reason that I want to take Eric Ebron, because I think to a certain extent he gives you – that type of weapon at a position where you really have a big need to a tight end. So I think the same reason you want to trade up to get a guy like Watkins, which I would love to get Sammy Watkins too. He's fantastic. So I understand your want for him. But that's the same reason that I'm leaning towards taking Ebron at 12, because I think he'll, you know, while he doesn't, you know, have the big speed and playmaking ability of Watkins, you know, few do, he's still that weapon in the middle of the field that you might even have to double team from time to time. He's too big for safeties, too small for linebackers. And to me, he's a guy that would give you the same type of effect that a Sammy Watkins would give you. Not to that extent. And I'm not saying he's as good of a player as Watkins. I'm not. If Watkins is there, I'm taking him over Eric Ebron every time. It's not even a question. But that's the same reason I would want to take Ebron with that first-round pick.
And I agree. I'm just getting worried that he's not going to be there the more I look, you know.
He might not be. I think in McShay's draft, he came out of this 4.0 draft last Thursday. I think he had Ebron going 9 to Buffalo, if I recall.
Yeah, so, my thought about Watkins was to, basically assure that you're going to have him rather than sitting there sweating at 12, and I think it would be a better move, in terms of, I think that move could make us a legitimate threat, to win the division and go deep into the playoffs this year. He's the only player that I can think of, and that I think would be able to do that. I'm not even so sure Ebron could, because I don't know where we're going to get that legitimate one outside receiver. But so that's the only thought I had, and I'd hate to sit there sweating it out, and then Buffalo takes him, and now, what do we do if Evans is gone? I don't even see a starting receiver, in the rest of the first round. So, I if we go into it with the same guys we had last year, minus Knicks, I think we got serious problems. But
thanks, Frank.
Appreciate
it, man.
But Paul, excuse me. Can I ask one more thing?
Yeah, real quick, Frank.
Sure. How deep do teams plan, like say the Giants? I mean, it worries me, Beeson, with his injury history. I mean, if we're stuck with him, if he gets hurt, I mean, is it Hurtslick, and is that what we're looking at, or is there somebody that can move into that spot?
I would guess you could figure out a way to use Paysinger in that spot. At worst comes to worst, I don't think that's an ideal situation. I think he'd be in the mix. I think Hurtslick would be in the mix. And I don't think it's out of the question the Giants pick maybe a middle linebacker at some point in the draft either to be that backup. And you know what? Jameel McClain might be able to do a little bit of that too. He played inside a little bit for Baltimore. Now, it was a 3-4, not a 4-3, but he might be a guy that could be in the mix there too.
And last, real quick, I know cornerback, is a strange slot right now because
yeah.
We may need him, we may not, but, if Gilbert's there at 12, how do you, with the best player available philosophy, how do you justify taking Martin over Gilbert at that spot if Gilbert's there?
I think that would be evidence that the best player available philosophy might not be as much of a be-all and end-all as other people might think.
Uh-huh.
I think it would be hard to justify Martin being a better NFL prospect than Gilbert.
Yeah, I agree.
Thanks, Frank.
Well, John, thanks so much. It's always really great talking to you.
Bye. Always good hearing from you, Frank. Thanks so much. All right, guys, we got to do on-cams with Bob Pop at 11 here. So I got to be off in, say, 10, 12 minutes. So we got 3 callers. Let's take them. Then we're going to say goodbye. I'll leave the most entertaining one for last. Let's go to Drew down in Virginia. Drew, what's going on?
Hey, John, what's going on, man?
What's up, Drew? How you been? I'm doing all right, man.
Pretty good, man. I missed you last week, although I will say that Lance was in rare form last week. Boy, was he the comedy show. But that was a good way.
Now, here's the question. Was it intentional comedy or unintentional comedy?
I don't know if it was. I just think he was just being his natural self. But it was.
Oh, that's too bad.
Funny,
that's very unfortunate. Nobody likes Lance when he's his natural self.
he had it going on. He was tripping last week. That's all I can say.
What do you got, Drew?
Hey, man. Just real quick, man. I want to address a couple of callers. So, first thing, man, is this mentality that our secondary is good enough and we don't really need we don't need a pass rusher on this team. I think that's a wrong mentality. I've always maintained and will continue to maintain that your secondary is only as good as your pass rush and vice versa, but mainly so with your pass rush. Again, my philosophy is the receivers know where they're going, the defenders don't. So, if you don't have an adequate pass rush there, and you give these guys too much time, they're going to kill you. So, I tend to be on the side that we do need a pass rush. However, we have too many holes on this team, and you've said that a number of times, and we have too many holes. And so, my philosophy still is going back to, we need to draft for offense. I think, and I do like the mentality that if we draft for offense, we get our offense together, we can put up enough points to maybe overcome some of our defensive deficiencies, and then later on we know we need to, you know, we need to beef up the defense. So I do agree with Nuggs and, you know, Len and some of the other guys that, hey, man, we really need to get the we need to be able to put points on the board. We put enough points on the board. Like they said, you know, if we're up, you know, 20, 25, I don't think we're going to be that far ahead. But, you know, if we're up, you know, 14 points or so, yeah, that's going to put pressure on a team, especially late in the game. And then, you know.
Hey, Drew, last year, how many times did we see the Giants go down early to these teams? And we see them unleash the pass rush on Eli Manning, and he didn't have a prayer. That's what you would hope the Giants would be able to do to somebody else.
Right, and exactly, and that's right there. If nothing else, we could see it the other way. Just what you said. Hey, man, our offense was inept, and the defense is just up on just murdered us. So, yeah, we definitely need to be able to get some offensive scoring and everything. And I just really think we need to go offense first. And yeah, we do need to fix the defense. I'm like a lot of our fans. I'm not exactly thrilled to death with the defense that we have. I was one who wanted Beeson, but you know, I still do have concerns with his injury history and everything else. But I just think with all the holes we have on this team, we need to go offense first. And then last thing I want to say, and I'll take your answer off the line. You know, let's not forget the owner said the offense was broken. And to me, that was a mandate that I don't care what you do, Jerry Reese, fix this offense or next year you'll be walking out the door too. Now, it wasn't that extreme, but that's my take on it. But my point is, can you expand on what the owner meant when he said the offense needs to be broken and my theory that we better fix this offense or else? I'll take your pants off the phone. Thanks.
Thanks, Drew. Appreciate it. Look, I think, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory what he meant. He meant the offense stunk last year. They couldn't score points. Eli was getting killed. He's the franchise. They couldn't move the ball. And it was tough to watch. When you have that much money invested in your quarterback, it's hard to see your offense play that poorly. I mean, the theory is that you spend that much on a quarterback, it guarantees your offense is going to be good. So when the talent around them becomes so poor that your $20 million a year quarterback can't function, and that really, to me, is what the case was last year. Eli couldn't function with the talent around them. That's how porous it was. And that's one of the reasons I think they need to go offense in the draft, and that's one of the reasons I think they'll do offense in the draft. You know, not necessarily because, you know, John Mara is sitting there over Jerry Reese's shoulder holding a guillotine. I don't think that's what's happening. But, look, Jerry Reese isn't blind. He didn't need John Mara to, you know, tell people that the offense was broken last year. He watched the games. He saw they couldn't move the ball. He saw they couldn't score. Real quick, Anthony and Phoenix on Twitter. We haven't heard from a while, by the way. You got to, you know, do a better job trying to get through here. You want to know what the scouts bring to the table when the Giants do their draft board. Well, very simply, Anthony, I think what they do, they go around the table on guys. They talk to the scout. They'll talk to the position coach for that guy at that position. You know, Mark Ross, the director of college scouting, will have his take. And then I'm sure Jerry Reese and Coach Coughlin have their takes as well. And they talk about each player. The scout gives all the information, and he compiles a report on a guy, and he hands out the report. The report will have things like height, weight, combine results. Then it'll have other things, you know, stuff from the interviews with the player, stuff from interviews with people around him at the school, family background. Production, what he saw on tape, his opinion of the player based on his production, what he does well, what he doesn't do well, how he projects to the NFL. And the scout, look, it's a informed opinion, but it's an opinion. The scout gives his opinion on this guy, how he thinks he's going to project in the NFL. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. And what the scout says will weigh heavily on what these teams, what the Giants do. Especially the background work, the stuff you can't see on tape. Because that's what the scout does. The scout's job is to bring stuff that maybe you can't see from just watching a couple of games. He's really done sometimes 2 or 3 years worth of research on these guys. And, you know, what a scout says in one of these reports or, you know, about a player in a meeting can take a guy off a draft board. So these scouts are very, very important. 201-939-4513. Two callers to go. Ed's in Houston first. Ed, what's up?
Hey, good morning, John. It's been a while.
Hey, Ed, what's going on, man? Good to hear from you. Have you been out on the boat yet?
Yeah, plenty of times.
Excellent.
But, yeah, I had about a month there. Last time I called in, I had the flu. It was the middle of March.
I remember that.
I had asked you about Eric Kennedy, and I want to thank you for bringing him back. I always like his input.
You know what? He's very intelligent. He does a good job running BBI over there, and I enjoy talking to him, to be honest with you.
You had Frank on a little while ago, and he was talking about what would it cost to move up to get Watkins. If Evans and Ebron are still there at 9 when Buffalo is going to pick, what would it cost to move from 12 to 9 to give the Giants a choice of one or the other?
12 to 9, you know, 12 to 9, that's honestly not going to be that much. And I close my internet window here. Right now on the football chart I'm going off of, and again, every team has a different variation of this, but this is good as a basic thing. To move from 12 to 9, you're looking at about 150 points. But to move around in the first round, always going to cost you a premium. So you're going to have to go above that point total. I'd say to move to 12 to 9, you're probably, a team will try to get your second round pick out of you if they can get it. You might be able to get away with just trading your 3 and your 4, something like that. But it will cost you either your 2 or a couple other middle round picks, maybe a 3 and a 5, something like that.
Well, if both of those guys are still there at 9, do you think that would be worth the price to move up there as opposed to maybe risking losing both of them by 12?
Who's there at 9? Ebron and who else?
Ebron and Evans.
If Ebron and Evans are both there at 9, do you consider moving up to get one or the other? That's a good question. You know what? I think it depends how many quarterbacks have been taken. I think if you're sitting there at 9 and Ebron and Evans are there, but, you know, Aaron Donald is there too and Terrell Lewan is there too, and you have those four guys on the board, I'm willing to wait till 12 to make my pick.
Oh, okay. Because I thought you said you really wanted an offense guy as a playmaker. You're not going to get that.
No, look, I know, and I know I said that, and it's a great question based on what my opinion is, and I think it's a fair one to ask, and I'd consider it. But this draft is deep, and I'll live with Aaron Donald in the first round. I just got to make sure I pick offensive players in rounds 2, 3, 4, and 5. And if I do that, I'll live with it. But if you pick Aaron Donald in that first round, you better pick offense the next 4 picks because you need to reinforce that offense. I think what you do then, you pick the best tight end on the board in the second round, whether it's Nicholas or Zafarian Jenkins. You pick a wide receiver in round 3. Hopefully a guy like Moncrief might fall to you in round 3, who I think can be a very good pro. Maybe that Allen Robinson kid out of Penn State. That's another guy that could maybe be there. And then around 4, I think you pick the best center or guard on the board, and you hope that he's good enough to, you know, start by the middle of the season.
Well, okay. Hey, one more question.
Yeah.
Nobody really asked it that I'm aware of. Whatever happened to Anita?
Oh, Anita will be back for the regular season as far as I know. She doesn't do much work with us in the offseason. She's more of an in-season person. So I would, as far as I understand, Anita Marks will be back with us in the summer and fall.
Okay. Hey, is there any chance a team that's overloaded with draft picks, like, say, San Francisco, I think they have 11 picks. Has anyone asked, you know, what are the odds of some of these teams that may only need one or two players because they're right there in the playoffs already, trade some of those extra picks and try and push their way up into the first round?
I think that's likely. I think, you know, even if they're not pushing up into the first round, I could see the 49ers. I think they have like the 57th and 61st or something like that. I could see them packaging a couple of late twos or a late 2 and an early 3 and moving up into the early second round, something like that. I think you're more likely to see movement like that than first round movement since it's so pricey. But I think the teams that you could see moving up, Ed, and I think you make a great point, you could see the 49ers moving up. The Ravens got a bunch of compensatory picks. You could see them trying to move up at some point. I think the Packers got a couple extra picks, too, and when they did the compensation, they could move up. The Jets have a lot of extra picks, I believe, in the middle rounds. They could move up. So I think there are some teams here that you could see moving around a little bit.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'd be real happy if they got Evans or Ebron in the first round and maybe get Yankee in the second and fill that right guard slot.
Hey, I'd be fine with that.
Okay, well, thanks for taking my call, John. I'll be calling you guys again soon. You do a real good job. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for holding it down in Houston for me.
I'll do it.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, boy. I need to mentally prepare myself for this because this is going to be comedy of the highest order, and hopefully you can give me an idea of what Lance was saying on Friday. Dave's in Rochester, who I haven't talked to in about a month. What's going on, Dave? Where the hell have you been?
I know, Johnny. How you doing? Good, good. Just working a lot, so I'm trying to get that done. But
excellent.
You know, I do got to ask you. I don't know if you know what the most popular pickup line in Idaho is.
Well, I don't know what it is in Idaho. What is it?
It's nice juice. Come on, Johnny. Who gets mad at shit in Idaho? What is everyone in the reception can get all gussied up in their favorite Who Farted t-shirts and head down to the Tilt-A-Whirl? Well, you live in New York City, man. It's the greatest city. What's up with Idaho?
I'm and not going to Idaho, left. Dave. It's Iowa. Iowa, not Idaho. One is potatoes, one is corn. They're very different.
All right. Well, I don't know if you heard the show. I mean, on Friday, but we had about 15 minutes of fun with this.
It was 15 minutes of it?
It's probably 12 minutes.
Good Lord. Oh, I got to listen to this thing. This is not good.
We got the Tino jokes, Lance jokes flying around. It's just crazy. I mean, we don't know if you're going to have a band or a demolition derby to go to later, you know? What's going on? Who's your best man? The Unabomber? What the heck is happening?
Hey, wait. First of all, number one, Dave. Iowa is actually a very nice place, and my fiance is from there, so I am not going to say anything negative about it. That's number one. Number two, you can joke all you want. Have you ever tried to plan a wedding in the New York and New Jersey area?
I have not. No,
it is the most
so.
Expensive thing on the face of the planet. The way they try to rip you off with stuff in New York and New Jersey planning a wedding, it's like they're dragging you across hot coals. It sucks, let me tell you. And to do the wedding in Iowa, where she's from, where a lot of her family is, which is great, is going to cost us basically a third of what it's going to cost to do it here. So God bless the Midwest, where things are reasonably priced. That's what I say.
Well, no, we understand it. Anybody, it's just jokes.
No,
it's
of course. Jokes, no, David, it's all fun. I laugh. Trust me, it's all good.
But we talked about maybe coming up to this day, maybe we need to have like a whole show just talking about the wedding. And, you know, we want to know who, you know, we tried to press Lance on Friday, but, you know, he wasn't sure. He figured that was your job. You know, we want to know who's sitting. Where's the Tino sitting? Was a big talk with Eisen? You know, where's he going to put his mustache? You know, all that stuff.
Well, look, here's the trick. And Lance knows this. He bails on everything. You try to get this kid to meet for drinks on a Friday, it's like trying to convince him to take a flight to Houston, Texas, all right? This kid doesn't come out for anything. And I would expect his, you know, good-for-nothing, lazy behind not to even make the trip out to Iowa. So we'll see if he actually makes the trip. As for Paul Dottino, it takes an act of Congress to get him to leave the state of New Jersey, okay? This guy lives in New Jersey. In order for him to go across state lines, he needs a very good reason. So unless he figures out a way to power walk out to Des Moines, I'm not sure if he's making the trip either, but the invitation's certainly in the mail.
Yeah, I think Mike Farmer got Lance to get some pictures of Tino at the reception if he goes. So,
You what, that would be pretty good. That would be pretty good.
All right, man, I know you got to go. Just, we love you, and we got 2 months of this, so let's do it.
All right, Dave, save up the jokes. I want to hear from you soon, all right, bud?
All right, brother, see ya.
Thanks, man. Thank you. I was waiting for Dave to call with some material. I like it. Good way to close out the show. Great job, everybody. I got to run. We'll see you tomorrow morning. We're going to actually talk. It's a perfect segue. Talk in Iowa. CJ Fedorowicz talk tomorrow. We'll be joined by somebody that covers him over there for the Des Moines Register. So we'll get our fill on what he can bring from the tight end position tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live. He'll be joining us at 10, so calls before, calls after. It'll be a quick spot, only 5 minutes, maybe 10. This is really the only guy coming out of Iowa this year that I think is worth talking about. So it'll be a quick spot. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 9:30, Big Blue Kickoff Live. See you then.